Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. A lot to get into here on a Friday. Let's not waste any time. Let's bring in from the Sporting Tribune, Brandon Deutsch, Grant Mona. We have a little bit of clarity in terms of the NBA postseason. Not quite with the Lakers, but we do with the Clippers. Grant will be out at Crypto.com Arena on Friday. Clippers going for the number four seed. Again, they locked that up with a win over the Utah Jazz. Grant, let's start here before we kind of focus on the game. You had mentioned you would like to see Kawhi one more time. I will just caution you with this. I will say that if Kawhi does not play in these last two games and he will not play Friday night, and once they win that game, I don't expect to see him again. That'll give him about 3 weeks in terms of, depending on the severity of why he's not playing, that'll give him 3 weeks off. I hope, and again, I have no inside information. No one really does with the Clippers. I mean, my guess is he'll be back for the postseason. Any concern with you about Kawhi not playing Friday and perhaps obviously not playing in that last game of the season?
There is concern, not just from me, but from Clipper fans, just because we've seen this before. And I think that Clipper fans just get a little bit scared around this time of year whenever you hear about their top players and knees, especially with Kawhi Leonard. Last year it was reported that, oh, he's just, you know, we're going to get some testing done and see how he feels. And it ended up being a torn meniscus and he never returned to play after that second game of the Sun series. This year, it's not the same, obviously, because they're reporting that the MRI was clean and everything, but Clipper fans, and myself included, we wanted to see Kawhi Leonard play at least one or two games before the playoffs. That's what would have at least have showed Clipper fans that, hey, I'm okay. I'm just taking my time resting. I want to just make sure I'm good for game one. I haven't seen any indication of that. Now, there was a video last week that Law Murray of The Athletic tweeted out of Kawhi Leonard at shoot around with the team, walking without a brace. He was in his practice stuff. Now, I don't think he practiced, but he was at least walking around with no signs of impediment. So that's good. But other than that, we haven't seen anything, heard anything. All we keep hearing is inflammation, inflammation, inflammation. And inflammation's not a good thing. That's what Jamal Murray had earlier in this month. And that's what kept him out for 9 or 10 games. And now Kawhi Leonard, this would be his ninth or ninth game missed in a row. Like you mentioned, Arash, that's 21 days that he'd have in between a last game and game one. So it's not ideal in terms of just throwing him out there for 40 plus minutes in a game one with no ramp up or anything. Now it is Kawhi Leonard and he's kind of a robot in terms of physical condition, but it's concerning, Arash, just because every every year there is some, why can't it just be going into the playoffs and be like, hey, everyone's healthy. It's a clean report. It's like, I know it's probably not serious. Like, I'm not doom or gloom right now, but there is a high level of concern within Clipper circles of this injury, just because initially it was soreness. Everyone's sore. Okay. We get it. You're out for a week or so. This is going on 3 weeks of an injury, and the Clippers, they have been winning in his absence, which is good, but it's just a little bit the wording and the reactions from Ty Lue and just the vibe around it is so off again. And I just wish that they could be like the Bucks and just say, hey, it's a this, and this strain when they have this amount of time left before he gets back. Like, the Clippers don't operate like that. I get it. But it's just, it's always concerning when this happens around this time of year. That's just what it is.
Yeah. And I remember I talked to Steve Ballmer a year ago, and he was just so beside himself. Like, he did not, he could not get why this team was never healthy again. 2020 in the bubble in Florida, that's different. Again, they were healthy, but you know, you go to 2021, Kawhi goes down. You go to 2022, Kawhi's out for this season. Then Paul George goes down and he's not there. He's not available. 2023, again, no Paul George. And then Kawhi goes down. And then now we'll see what happens. But it's just, you know, one of the big reasons that I felt that they made the James Harden deal was that they're like, we don't know who's going to be healthy. So at least with if we have a fully healthy team, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, like, Two of those guys, again, their hope is those two guys are Kawhi and Paul George. But even if not, you know, at least if Kawhi's not there, and again, if Kawhi's not there, they're not beating the Mavericks. But at least they have James Harden, and they have Russell Westbrook, and they have conceivably Paul George. All right, Brandon, let me check in with you. Listen, this is going to be a tough series. They are slated to play the Dallas Mavericks. They win tonight, they will get the fourth seed. I think there's no doubt that they will win one of the last two games, and I think that they'll win tonight going away against Utah Jazz. At least they have home court advantage, but they are playing the hottest and arguably the best team in the league right now. What's your concern with Kawhi? And even if Kawhi is healthy, can the Clippers beat the Mavericks?
I mean, I've been really, really, just on the Mavericks winning the series in five or six games. Probably, I do think if Kawhi Leonard's healthy, the Clippers get a game or two, but this is a different Mavericks team. I mean, when Daniel Gafford and Luka Doncic are on the floor at the same time, not Kyrie Irving, Daniel Gafford and Luka Doncic, when they start, they're 17-1.
Wow.
And the Clippers, what do they lack? They don't have big men. They just have Zubac, right, and Plumlee. I mean, and like, that's fine. Sure, they can protect Gafford a little bit. Can those guys switch? They're not as good shot blockers as Gafford is. I think at the end of the day, Kyrie and Luka will just be able to carry the perimeter game. They've got some guys who are shooting. Tim Hardaway, Exum, all these guys coming in. Josh Green, when he's healthy. All of these guys can shoot. I just think it's a bad matchup for the Clippers. I mean, sure, you'd have to rely on Plumlee and Zubac to play all these minutes to guard guys like Gafford from getting offensive rebounds. Because if they try the small ball and put P.J. Tucker out there with Gafford, and, you know, if when Lively's healthy, and of course P.J. Washington too, who they acquired, probably the best acquisition of the trade deadline, by the way. He's been excellent for them. I think this is a championship team, and I think the Clippers aren't a championship team. Just what I see top to bottom. I think we kind of, you know, see the sum of all of its, you know, sum of all of its holes or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, or its parts or whatever. Like, they're not, it hasn't come all together is my point. And at this point in the season, when you see teams like the Lakers and Clippers, they don't have it all together, even though the Lakers have been playing much better basketball than the Clippers over the past 2 months. Still, you can't trust teams like that going into the playoffs. You just can't.
Yeah. So let's play this out. Like, let's just say Kawhi is healthy enough to suit up and play, but maybe, you know, and to your point, Grant, you know, when on one side, yes, he had 3 weeks off. On the other side, you know, when you haven't played for 3 weeks, tough to kind of throw him back into the mix. If the Clippers lose in the first round, like, even if it's a 7-game series and it's a classic series, at the end of the day, if you lose in the first round, what do they do with this roster? Again, there's been questions about Paul George. Do they bring him back? James Harden, Russell Westbrook. Kawhi will be back. Is Ty Lue back? Is Lawrence Frank back? Again, we'll be talking about this as the playoffs progress, but just for the sake of, you know, conversation now, I mean, if the Clippers do what a lot of people think, that, listen, they've been a good team, but they're not as good as the Mavericks right now. And the way that the Mavericks are playing, I mean, they probably have the best chance of any team to unseat the Denver Nuggets in the West. So if they beat the Clippers, even in a classic seven-game series, where do the Clippers go from here, Grant? I mean, like, what are the biggest changes? Like, is the coach back? Is the GM back? Are all four of their big four players back?
It depends, I think, on how it goes. Because if it is like a hard-fought seven-game series where everyone goes off, but the Mavericks just out-talent them, then I still think everyone comes back. And honestly, this is what Brandon does on his TikTok, which I love, is that he does what should happen and what will happen. What should happen is that the Clippers should really explore a Paul George sign and trade, a James Harden sign and trade, something like that. That's what they should do if there's a first round exit, because you can't just keep doing this every year. I said this last offseason that you got to try something new. And the something new that they tried was they traded for James Harden, and it actually worked. What they will probably do, Ross, just judging off of who Steve Ballmer is and how the organization has operated, I think they will re-sign Paul George or keep him when he opts into his final year, re-sign James Harden, just because they need people to go into this new arena with marketing. It's just what it is. Steve Ballmer is all about that type of stuff. He's stuck with Kawhi Leonard through injuries. He's stuck with Paul George through injuries. So I think that that front office, they really like the idea of those two together with a couple of other supplemental stars. I just think that's how the front office thinks. Now, what they should do is go younger, get more size, get more versatile wings, and get more athletic. That's what can match up against Denver, and that's what can match up against some of these bigger, younger teams like OKC and Minnesota. So it's going to go based on how the series goes. Now, if Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and James Harden go nuclear, but Luka and Kyrie just go even more nuclear and they get the series victory, then, you know, I could understand them bringing everyone back. But if it's a flame out where, like Brandon said, they lose in five games or some guys look terrible, then I could see them making a significant change. I think Ty Lue is safe just because they had 50 plus wins on the season. They won the Pacific Division. I know it's the Pacific Division, but they still won it.
Yeah.
They had a decent regular season. It's probably going to be because of those two things. I don't think it's Ty Lue, maybe Lawrence Frank, maybe, but that's another big if. I think they just really love this core, Rosh.
Yeah. Before I check in with Brandon, I'll give you a quote, and I won't tell you the name of the person, but when they broke up the Lob City Clippers at the very end, someone said there are cheaper ways to lose in the first round. And so, you know, when you talk about the payroll that it takes to have Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, and it's like, it's a very good team, very talented team. But if they lose in the first round this year, they lost in the first round last year. They got bounced in, what was it, the play-in tournament the year before that. In 2021, they get to the Western Conference Finals. It's kind of like one of those things where, like, again, Steve Ballmer has no problem paying. Again, so he'll pay top dollar. He'll pay the luxury tax. He'll pay all that. At some point, you get tired of paying that for a team that's going to flame out in the first round. Brandon, what would you do? Again, let's play it out, best case scenario. I will say this, Grant, I don't disagree with you, but I wonder if I change the trajectory of my franchise based off of like a game or two. Like if they lose in five versus seven, like you should kind of have a feel of what you want to do regardless, but I don't think you're wrong. If it's a classic seven game series and the Mavericks win on a last second shot, then it's like, oh, we were right there. Brandon, what would you do if the Mavericks do what you think that they will, then they beat the Clippers in a, let's just play it out, a very competitive seven game series?
Well, again, it's like what Grant said, what should or will, because nothing's going to change. They're going to bring back Paul George. I mean, hope maybe they trade him. I think that has to be the avenue. He's really just deteriorated as a player on both ends of the floor. I know he had that crazy game against Cleveland, who, by the way, was on the second night of a back-to-back. So let's take that performance with a grain of salt. He still did it, but it's like playing the Athletics after they played two games against you already the weekend and everyone's tired and they're the Athletics, right? Like, it's the same thing. At the end of the day, even though the Cavs have 46 wins, I mean, they're the most fraudulent 46 or 47 win team I've ever seen in my life. At the end of the day, Paul George, I don't care about ticket sales. I know Steve Ballmer does, but you know the saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it? What about the opposite? You're going to keep doing the same thing every single year?
Definition of delusion.
At some point, you have to make at least one change, right? Like with your two stars. If LeBron and Davis didn't go to the Western Conference Finals last year, there would be conversations about trading Anthony Davis. That is just a fact. That is what organizations do. But they did, right? And again, there'll be conversations with the Lakers this offseason. The Clippers need to start having those conversations. This is finally the first time you're hearing rumors about them even considering a Paul George trade in the offseason, which is progress for them because they're a very prideful front office in what they've shown over the past few years, rarely wanting to make moves. They did with the James Harden, which I'll give them credit for. It helped them a lot in the regular season. But can they take that next step and put their pride aside and say, look, this didn't work out. Let's trade Paul George. Let's see what happens. I don't think they can.
Yeah, and to the ticket point, again, they're not going to have a problem that first season. I think everyone's going to want to see the newest, you know, a $2 billion new home. And so I do love, and again, this wasn't, I don't think this was their thought process, but it worked out perfectly to have four of the greatest players to be born and be from Los Angeles County. I think that means something. I think you can really kind of lean into that. Doing the stuff, what they're doing with the high school jerseys. And I don't know. I think when you're the Clippers, like, you want it to be of Los Angeles as much as you possibly can. Switching gears, the Lakers, again, don't know exactly where they're going to end up. It'll be right down to the wire. They're going to be playing the Memphis Grizzlies G League team. I don't know what their G League team is called, but one of the more hilarious injury reports in recent league. I think all 12 people, all 12 guys were on that. So if you're like out there on a 10 day or looking for a contract, that you might play. Grant, let me get your thoughts before getting Brandon's thoughts. The Lakers, they put themselves in this hole. I mean, I think the way that things are going to probably shape up, that they're going to have to win two games just to have the honor of playing the Denver Nuggets in the first round.
Yeah, it's such a tough scenario just because they've dug themselves this hole. And I know that the Warriors are right behind them, and we don't know where this game's going to be exactly yet. The 9-10 game, and the Kings, they look like they lost last night. So it's such a mess from 7 through 10 to where the Lakers could maybe sneak into the 8. I don't know. It's not a foregone conclusion yet. Like, everyone's kind of saying that it's going to be 9-10. It's not over yet. Now the Kings do have the tiebreaker, so that is a pretty big detriment. But for the Lakers, if you handle your business in the last, the only thing the Lakers can worry about right now is winning the last two games. Like, don't worry about anything else. Don't worry about scenarios. Just win your last two games, because, and this happens to the Lakers all the time. Brandon knows this. Arash, you know this. Every time there's a player that's injured and there's an opportunity for them to play against the Lakers, they take that opportunity. And Brandon Ingram is going to suit up on Sunday against the Lakers after being out for what, 10 games? And he's going to suit up against the Lakers? Of course he is. So you're going to get a Pelican squad that's also fighting for seeding and also probably going to be at full strength. They're not going to rest anybody because they want to get the highest seed possible. So I'm not really worried about this game against Memphis. I'm really worried about the game on Sunday against New Orleans, because that has plenty of implications. And that could be like an early play-in game type scenario, just like we saw the game against the Warriors. So there's going to be, for the Lakers, I think just handle your business. Don't worry about any of the outside stuff. Don't worry about any of the, scenarios of, hey, we could be 10 or we could move all the way up to 8. It just handle your business, take care of your wins, make sure you're healthy going into that play-in type scenario. Because right now you can't really worry about any of that other stuff. You can't control it. All you can control is winning the games in front of you to finish the season. And honestly, getting that momentum going into the play-in. Because I think, and I've said this, Brandon and Arash, you both know this, if you get Anthony Davis and LeBron healthy in a play-in playoff scenario, I like the Lakers' chances, and they've shown that they can get out of the play-in just like last year.
Brandon, yeah, it's gonna, your thoughts.
Yeah, it's going to be substantially tougher this year if they're 9 or 10. But, I mean, look, the Kings lost last night, so there still is a path to 8, you know, which is kind of crazy. The Warriors almost lost, but they didn't. So at the end of the day, you know, that would have helped them a lot if Portland could have pulled that off, but they didn't. So at the end of the day, I really like the Lakers' chances if they get the 8 seed, and I hate their chances if they get the 9 or 10 seed, because at the end of the day, you're going to give all your effort to a Stephen Curry just to win that game, and then Sacramento the next night or New Orleans or whatever, you know, it's just going to be tough. It's just so hard.
Yeah, I mean, when you have two win-or-go-home situations, that's the difficulty there. If they just go into that 8 seed, again, they win and advance. And even if they lose, they live to see another day. That's the difference between being in that 7-8 game and that 9-10 game. And so just, and again, they really put themselves in this situation where, yes, that they have more wins this season than they did a year ago, but there were so many wins that they just gave up. And that, you know, post game, and we'll talk about this when we come back, but just how Darvin Ham, the rotations, and then very much, really the worst quote. And if this is the end of the run for him, like, I'll keep going back to him. Like, why do people live and die with like every result? Well, because at the end of the day, Darvin Ham, like, if you don't win the games you should win, you're in this situation where it's a tiebreaker. You will not be in that 7-8 game because of one win. And so that is why fans care about losses, that a lot of them have to do with matchups, a lot of them have to do with the lineups that he puts out there. And so it's year after year we deal with this, where one loss or one win is the difference between them being in the play-in and then actually being a playoff team. So let's leave it there for now. When we come back, we'll talk more about the Lakers and the Clippers, but also the fallout from the Shohei Ohtani situation when we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
We'll be right back with the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Welcome back to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or comment or want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas or Hawaii, call our hotline 310-400-0340. All right, so this Shohei Ohtani news, and you know, this was a, we knew the truth would come out. I mean, the fact of the matter is this was a federal investigation. So, I mean, the big key there, this is not a league investigation. This is not a team investigation. This is a federal investigation where you're going to have, you know, someone trying to, you know, they have text messages, they have wire transfers, they have, I mean, like, they're going to find out the truth. We thought this would take a little bit longer than it did. Thankfully, apparently, for Shohei Ohtani, it didn't have to take as long as we did. And we found out exactly the extent of his interpreter's involvement in this situation. Ohtani's ex-interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara, stole $16.1 million from Shohei Ohtani. And again, at the beginning of this, we knew it was at least $4.5 million, and that was a big figure. For it to be $16 million really shows you the size and scope of this thing. But the two, at least there's been a lot of big takeaways from this before we bring in Grant Mona and Brandon Deutsch to comment on it. The big takeaway, Shohei Ohtani was not involved. And again, I know that most people out there want Shohei involved. And when I say that, it's sort of like it's a juicier story when Shohei's involved. It's a juicier story if we have Pete Rose 2.0. The fact of the matter is he was not involved. He didn't know about it. He got this money stolen from him. His interpreter set up this bank account. And this is what I'll tell you guys, and you guys know a lot of professional athletes as well. From a lot of the players I've covered, they would not know the username and password for their bank account if you went up to them today. They do not check it on the regular. They have financial advisors doing it. They have, whether it's family members or close friends, and you can say that that's wrong. Like, you should know when your paycheck comes in, and you should know how much is in your these most professional athletes don't. They know they have a lot of money. They know if they need money, it's there for them. They have a credit card, and that's it. It's a carefree lifestyle. It's a blessed lifestyle. Most of them have been that way since they were kids. And so, you know, this idea that Shohei Ohtani knows what his bank account looks like on a day-to-day basis, that's false. That Shohei Ohtani would know what his interpreter, again, to place wagers with a bookie is a text message. The fact, listen, Shohei Ohtani may be very good friends, and he was. He was very good friends with his former interpreter. He doesn't know that he's placing bets. He doesn't know what he's texting. And again, I know it's a lot more juicier to say, oh, there's more here. The federal government, in a federal investigation, they there's no reason for them to protect Shohei Ohtani. If there was one text message, if there was one smoking gun out there that connected Shohei to this, we would know about it. The fact of the matter is that does not exist. And by the way, the bookie, at no point did the bookie even say, oh yeah, like Shohei was involved. Again, like nobody has to protect Shohei. The bookie could lie. He knew that he shouldn't lie. And so he basically said, listen, I kind of made people think that I was getting bets from Shohei, even though I don't know Shohei Ohtani. He never bet on the game. The other big thing about it is that no bets were placed on Major League Baseball. So you have to give Stipe a little bit of credit. It's like to know, A, he was doing something wrong, but even he knew. The problem with that would have been is that he was so closely connected with Shohei and in a Major League Baseball clubhouse where if he made bets on baseball, listen, he's not a player, but that would have been a problem that would have raised some red flags. Following this very thorough investigation, that was not the case. Okay, so that's all said. Grant, I want to go to you first. This has been something that, again, people who are conspiracy theorists are going to continue to think Shohei was involved. The fact of the matter is, this was a federal investigation, and they found Shohei not to be involved one bit.
Yeah, and that's the big thing that I was waiting for, because I, too, was skeptical at the beginning. I didn't know what was going to come of this, but now that we have a federal investigation where the FBI was involved, everyone was involved, everyone that you could ever want involved was involved, and they did a thorough investigation of it. Now that we know that Shohei has been cleared of that, it makes a lot more sense. And just some of the evidence is just so damning against Ipe, right? Like, he just could not stop betting. I mean, in some of those text messages, he was saying, can you bump me again? Can you bump me? Can you keep bumping me? And like, you're right, Arash. You know, when you're in the thick of a 162 game season like you are with Shohei, especially year in and year out, and he's, you know, one of the global stars of this game, you're not paying attention to your bank account every day. I'm sorry, you're just not. Like, these athletes aren't going and checking their bank accounts every single day, especially when you have a job to do every single day like a baseball player. Like, you're not going, maybe some people do, but he probably trusted the people that were around him with his money. And that's something that a lot of athletes do, like you mentioned. But, you know, just some of these text messages are just, it's just so odd. I mean, they're saying like some of the bets ranged from 10 all the way to 160,000 per bet. And that, you know, Ipe was what, 40 point something million in debt. That's how much he lost.
Amazing.
So, and the fact that he won $140 million from betting is like crazy as well. That's a substantial amount of money. Somebody was making a joke that he was in debt more than the Oakland Athletics payroll or something like that. Like, he was close to that. So it's you know, also the fact that he pled guilty to this, Ipe, to this, whatever he was charged with the bank fraud, he pled guilty, which means that he knew he was in the wrong. And, you know, the one text that I want to read is that, it was from the bookmaker one, which they call him, but it was to Ipe. And, you know, the bookmaker said, you know, obviously you didn't steal from him. I understand it's a cover job. I totally get it. And then Ipe responded, technically I did steal from him. It's all over for me. So like, that's a confession in itself. But now people are trying to find every little thing to go against Shohei Ohtani. Like you mentioned, Arash, like people are saying, oh, well, he did say technically he did. It's like, Shohei Ohtani wouldn't turn in his phone to the authorities just saying, here, read whatever you have, if he was hiding anything. Let me just get that straight. Nobody that's hiding anything just does that. And Shohei did. He just said, hey, here, read all my texts, read everything that I have, everything on my phone. I'm clear. I'm innocent. And he was. So I'm glad that this investigation is over with, because some of these things that were being thrown out there were honestly ridiculous. I mean, I understand maybe when it first happened, but now that you have a FBI investigation into it, it's kind of ridiculous how people are still running with that theory.
Yeah. I mean, Brandon, this was one of these stories that we knew we would get the truth at some point. Thankfully for Shohei, thankfully for the Dodgers in terms of them moving on from this. He's been cleared. But listen, this will linger. Obviously, it's a big story. But I mean, you cover Shohei. You were right next to Ipe. Your thoughts as you read this, knowing that you were right next to these guys a year ago.
It's crazy, right? Because Ipe is like always with Shohei. So when is he placing all these bets? Like, he's always with him. I just made it, it was like wild. Was he like pulling up his phone in the clubhouse betting, like on illegal, like in the locker room while he's next to Shohei? Like, I don't even know what was going on there. At the end of the day, there's two things that are weird about this whole situation. Now, it's great Ohtani wasn't involved, right? And he didn't know. And people are like, oh, he didn't know. Rosh, you hit it right on the money. I barely check my bank account. I don't play baseball anymore because I'm always busy all day working out, training, working. Like, there's not a lot of time. Now, this is a guy who has to be, I mean, when you're playing professional baseball or any sport, you got to be there, what, 4 or 5 hours early before the game, locked in, you're training. When you're at home, you're eating, sleeping, and you have so much money. You're not going to manage it on a daily basis. He trusted Ipe. You know, it was a betrayal. It wasn't good at all. Trusted the wrong guy. Turns out Ipe was like, you know, kind of a scammer. He lied about his whole university thing and accolades and everything. But the fact of the matter is the Angels weren't going to look into it further because Shohei trusted him. And that's the guy he wanted, right? So that's why they kept him there. At the end of the day, what's so weird is how did the bookie keep allowing him to make these bets? I know, I know that it wasn't directly Shohei Ohtani, but I wonder if Ipe said he was Shohei Ohtani, or if, like, you know, or if I have the go ahead and blah, and he didn't, you know, because when you're a bookie, you're going to accept from an interpreter. I know who knows Shohei Ohtani, but like all of these millions of dollars, I wonder if there's something more going on about him. Not Shohei being involved, but him impersonating Shohei, or at least giving
him an impression. That is such a great point. So here's the thing. There's no doubt that he got the leash that he did and the line of credit that he did because of his connection to Shohei Ohtani. And to your point, when you say he was next to him, anytime we saw Shohei, whether it was on the field at a Dodgers game, whether it was in a press conference, whether it was in the clubhouse, like Ipe was always there. So if you're a bookmaker and you're looking at this and like Shohei Ohtani at that point is worth God knows how much. Again, we know the contract that he got. And we also know like the contract he was due to make a year ago before he signed it. I think that there was talk about like how big is this contract going to be. It is very clear that Ipe did. Now, listen, with the bookmaker, I don't think he passed himself off as Shohei. With the bank, however, according to the investigation, he did pass himself off as Shohei. But if you're the bookmaker, listen, you know who you're dealing with, but you also know that this guy is connected at the hip with Shohei. So I do think that Ipe at some point probably said, Listen, Shohei's not involved, but he knows what I'm doing. I'm good for it. If I need Shohei, like it's very clear that the bookmaker was under the impression that Shohei had like deep base back. And by the way, like, there's no doubt that he thought that. I don't think the bookmaker thought he was stealing from him. I think when the bookmaker is taking bets of this magnitude, and you're talking about, you know, millions of dollars, I think that the bookmaker said, well, listen, I'm not dealing with Shohei. This guy's Shohei's interpreter, but Shohei has to know, right? But granted, I think that was my biggest thing was that he doesn't, like, no, by the way, no one gets this line of credit. This is a syndicate. This is not just one bookmaker. There's probably more of that story, but I mean, there is no legal bookmaker that's doing this kind of transactions. I mean, this is massive, but they probably thought that like Gipe was backed by Shohei, or that Shohei knew and was helping his friend out.
Yeah, he knew who Ipe was and who he's associated with. I mean, that's why he kept bumping his line of credit, because he knew that he had the money of his best friend to back him. But you know, like Brandon mentioned, you know, we don't know if there's a report that said that investigators also relied on recorded phone calls from the bank in which Mizuhara falsely identified himself as Ohtani to trick and deceive bank employees into authorizing the transfers.
Yep.
So he was changing passwords. He was acting like he was Ohtani. So if you're going to those amounts of lengths to impersonate someone, like, I can fully understand why Shohei would not want any association with him. And especially with how Shohei is with people and how, you know, he comes off. He seems like an angel. Like, this is a guy that just cares about baseball and working hard.
He was an angel.
Yeah.
I had to. I'm sorry. Not an angel anymore.
I think Brandon wishes he was.
He was, exactly.
But I meant like he's an angel in terms of his personality, but that's really funny. So like all this stuff coming out about how bad of a person Ipe was, that's like what is catching me by like off guard so much, is that you know, Brandon was there too and he was in the clubhouse. Like, you would have never thought that this guy was some like bank fraud type of player of person, just by the way he interacted with everyone and how, you know, close he was with one of the most genuine, you know, stars that this sport has. So I think that's what's just really taking everyone for a loop, is that all these things that are coming out are just so disgusting that you would never associate it with Ipe or Shohei before this whole scandal. So Brandon, you mentioned it, and the thing that the tricking and deceiving the bank people is just hilarious. Yeah. So
that's why I'm saying it's not out of question that he
just so odd
to the bookmakers too.
Yeah,
but it did seem like the bookmaker thought with that text message. And by the way, Grant, you could tell who's on what side of this when they don't include like. Ipe's response to that, which is, you don't technically steal. You steal or you don't steal. There's no technically. So, but I do think the bookmaker thought that Shohei was helping his friend. I mean, clearly, like no one thought that like Ipe had that amount of cash. So they probably thought, listen, Shohei's not. I'm not taking bets from Shohei. I'm not talking to Shohei. So, to my knowledge, Shohei's not involved. But like, I am under the assumption that he is involved in terms of he's bankrolling his friend. I mean, when you talk about the amount of millions of dollars at stake here, so you know the way that this is going to play out is like, you know, the league's not going to do anything. I mean, unless something else comes up, I think like this basically closes the book on that investigation. But it does make you wonder, you know, like again, when Shohei trusts his interpreter, there's no reason to do a further background check. But you knew from the moment when people started to look at like, wow, like he didn't even go to that college he said he did. And again, that's a small thing, that's a red flag. And it's like, okay. And then, but man, I mean, what a life, right, guys? Like he had it made. Like, I'm not saying that he would have been, I'm sure he got paid well. And I don't know what that was, whether
it was 500K a year.
I mean, so you're talking about like $500,000 a year for like the rest of your life, basically. I mean, at some point, Shohei, I think, was just comfortable having an interpreter like, and a very good friend with him. So you're looking at least like the next 10 years of making at least 500K. But then like the lifestyle, right? Like, you know, the charter flights, the private jets, the, you know, all like everything that comes with it. And now you're probably going to go, you're probably going to go to jail. I mean, he is negotiating, what his guilty plea will look like. But this idea that he's like a fall guy, like, guys, listen, I mean, if this was a league investigation or a team investigation, we can maybe have a little bit of fun with that. The FBI was involved. This was a federal investigation. There is no reason for them to protect him at all. Before we close out, wanted to, you know, again, we kind of talked about the Lakers somewhat, but speaking of investigation, you know, a lot of people are now coming up with the Darvin Ham, like let's now like take a look at the season. Like let's look at how the Lakers lineups went. What is the most egregious thing, Brandon, that Darvin Ham did? There's the Torian Prince. There's the Cam Reddish. There's the benching of Austin Reeves. There's the never, ever, ever playing the lineup that you guys love so much that, by the way, was the reason that this team got to the Western Conference Finals a year ago, which is the reason that everyone was excited about this season. When you looked at this team on paper, you thought, this is a top six team. I mean, there's not even a question. What is the most egregious thing that Darvin Ham did this season?
100%. Now, look, Jason Tim posted this, and Grant sent this to me yesterday. The Lakers get eliminated next week. Here's why. During the 3-10 stretch after the IST, Darvin Ham played Reddish and Prince a staggering 59.2 minutes per game. This season, in 2,609 possessions with Reddish and Prince off the floor, the Lakers have a plus 9.3 net rating per CTG, meaning... And basically, stats aside, they would win at least three or four more games minimum if they had just played Rui Hachimura more. The guy that paid got him out of the play-in. They'd be in the sixth seed at least.
Yeah,
probably four seed.
Amazing.
Probably four seed.
And another thing, I think there's another stat that where if Torian Prince plays less than 20 minutes, the Lakers have like this enormously great record. Yeah. And it's like a real thing. And yet Darvin Ham was starting him. This is where the season went wrong, guys. He benched the three out of the four highest paid players on the team. He benched Rui, he benched Austin Reeves, and he benched D'Angelo Russell in that stretch in January. Nice. That is unbelievable. When now you think of this team, those are three of their best players right now. And he had them coming off the bench for Cam Reddish and Torian Prince. And I think Gabe, I don't even know who's starting at point guard at that point, but that is just unheard of, just considering how great they're playing now. What could have been if they just had an average January? If they just had an average January or a slightly above average, they would probably be playing the Clippers right now in the first round. I'm genuinely serious about that, because this team before the season was projected with their depth and with everything they had to be one of the best. I thought they would be a top three seed. Mm-hmm. And that January ruined them because of bad rotations, guys getting the wrong minutes. Yes, injuries, but it's just such bad management of a roster.
Yeah, I mean, I generally like to give coaches a little bit of leeway. That's why a year ago when, you know, before we went into the playoffs, I said, listen, Ham is going to come back. And then obviously they get to the Western Conference Finals and of course he's going to come back. But certainly this season, if their season comes to an end, either in the play-in tournament or they get bounced in the first round, I can't imagine Darvin Ham will be back. And there's a laundry list of reasons for that. All right. Been another amazing week. That's all the time we have for today. Let's do it again next week. Until then, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe and stay healthy.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.